So at least in the meantime, we can open up the Gemara's, the Daf Mem on Beis. And yesterday we gave out a photocopy of a page. It should say on the top of it.
What is it, Mem?
It should say. I'll just tell you in a split second. It should say on it Lamed He. Oh, wait a second. The Gemara is Daf Mem Amid Beis, but I'm saying I gave out yesterday a page that should say Lamed He on the top. So you didn't get that.
You have another copy?
I don't have another copy.
No, I'll make a copy. If you give me a copy, I'll photocopy it right now.
Yeah, I need this for the shear. That's the only
thing. Oh, you don't have it.
No, I just photocopy it.
Okay, then.
We're missing Ben with his.
Yeah, Ben is not here, so we'll have to do the photocopying without him. I had indicated that the ambitious people would photocopy the rest of this article on Lamed Vav. I guess no one was so...
We were ambitious, but not enough.
Not ambitious enough. Okay.
Yes, it's an ambition, a good midah, not a good midah.
In this case, I think it's a kina sofer mar b'chochma, we would think it's a good midah. So I have the following schedule today. I have to give a shiur in Meleches Borer. We started that 2 days ago. I want to finish that Mirtz Hashem today. And then I have a shiur which I give on Skype, and that's going to be on the topic of one who tried to light the candles, didn't succeed. Does he have to make a new bracha when he finally gets it right? You know, let's say the oil spilled or the oil didn't take. Now he has to switch it with other oil.
That's got to be the most common.
Well, no, the wind would be after it already lit. That's then you, for sure you don't make a bracha after that. Because we pass in Kovsa Ein Zokh. I'm asking in a case where it never actually lit. You know, the oil spilled before he got to light it. Now he wants to fill it up with other oil. Can he get away with the original bracha, or the original bracha is lost? So what we did photocopy yesterday was page Lamed Hay. And the end of this article is on Lamed Vav.
I'm happy to copy right now.
That would be great. Okay. I'd love to do this before the Shia, not waste, but you know, it's Hanukkah and we got to do the best.
Do we need Lamed Vav? Because we don't have Lamed Vav.
Yeah, I'm going to copy Lamed Vav. I'll copy Lamed Vav for all the Lamed Vav that came here.
Oh, excellent. That's excellent.
He's talking about the number of candles, right?
So in the meantime, we're both sides. We're on Daf Mem Amid Beis, and we'll make some progress in the sugi itself, and then we'll, in Mirtz Hashem, go through this article, which Ben is kindly photocopying for us. And what we have here on Daf Mem Amid Beis, you recall that we discussed the case where he washes his hands and then he wants to dry his hands next to the fireplace, and that was a problem. And now we go on with another case. So let's see if we can find the place. I would say it would be approximately 7 lines down from the top. Let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 lines down from the top. Tana Rabbana. Okay, so we're on Daf Mem Amid Beis, 7 lines down from the top, Tana Rabbana. Mecham Adam Aluntis, a person is allowed to warm up an Aluntis, and that's a Beged, and he wants to lay a warm Beged onto his belly, that'll help settle his upset stomach. And he's allowed to do this. Umenicha al bnei me'ayim. He can place it over his belly, b'Shabbos, on Shabbos itself. Again, the reason why he's allowed to do this is because he's not violating any sort of malacha whatsoever, and this is not called a refuah. The Gemara is going to try to figure out. We don't do medicines on Shabbos unless it's a real serious disease. Here he's just trying to feel a little bit more comfortable. But for some reason, which we'll get to later on, this does not constitute a violation of the Iser Refuah. And he certainly is not violating any Iser Bishul because he doesn't cook this garment, this cloth. and in that case he hasn't violated anything whatsoever. However, the Gemara says, "Ubilvad," what he's not allowed to do is shelo yavi. If you have an extra copy, I'll take one. Yeah, ubilvad shelo yavi kumkum shalmayim chamim. He's not allowed to take some sort of a container that's holding on to hot water.
Thermos.
Let's say a thermos. I would think more in terms of a. Trying to remember what it's called. We actually put it on our stomachs very often.
Well, hot water bottle.
That's what they call it, a hot water bottle.
Yeah, okay. You know, it's made of rubber usually.
Yeah, we have something we call a beanie bag at home. Anyway, so he says that this you're not allowed to do. Why? He says, "V'anicho al bnei me'ayim b'Shabbos v'dover ze afilu bechol osim b'nei asakon." So let's go slowly. The Brisa doesn't tell us exactly why it's usher on Shabbos. We're going to have about five different opinions as to why it's usher to do this on Shabbos. But none of those logical reasons will apply on the weekday. They're all Shabbos reasons. But there's a whole different reason why you're not allowed to do this even during the week. And that's because of sakana. If the water is very hot, then we're afraid that it might spill over. And that would be dangerous for his body. So we don't want to put hot water in a jar, in a container, on our bellies even during the week. So let's go slowly. First of all, why is this prohibited on Shabbos? Okay, so there's a footnote here, number Ches, and I'm just going to summarize it for you, just push it, a whole bunch of reasons why this is prohibited. One explanation is that this is called rechitza. This is called washing the body. Even though he's not actually bathing, and he's certainly not washing his whole body. And l'chora, even if you'd say that this was washing part of his body, even if I grant you that, it should depend upon when the water was heated up. It doesn't say here in the braisa when the water was heated up. If the water was heated up on Shabbos itself, then we're not allowed to have any benefit from that water that was heated on Shabbos. That's called Chamin Shehuchmu B'Shabbos. And even if there was no violation, there was no Avera that was done here, you know, he had it on a system where the water was heating up on Shabbos, nevertheless, he still is not allowed to do this. He's got to set up a system where the water is absolutely hot on Erev Shabbos. And in this case, again, according to this is one opinion, the Magen Avraham, let's say, is that this water was heated up on Shabbos. It wasn't hot before Shabbos, it got hot on Shabbos, and therefore it's also, you're not allowed to have any benefit from it. We said afilu shtia, afilu part of Yadav Araglov, and therefore this is prohibited. The Ritva says, even if this water was completely heated on Erev Shabbos, nevertheless, we hold like Shmuel. Shmuel, which we learned on Daf Memo and Aleph, was of the opinion that in a case of water that was heated up on Erev Shabbos, you're only allowed to wash Yadav, Panav, Raglav, only those three organs of the body. Here, the act of Rechitza is on his keres. Keres means on his belly, and that was not included under the heter of Panav, Yadav, Raglav. Okay. Then we have another explanation, which is also offered by the Ritva as an alternative explanation, that according to Shmuel, even if you'd be allowed to bathe your belly, but we're always afraid that once we allow you to do that, you might come to do a rechitza of kol gufa. Okay? And I'm trying to concentrate despite the background music. I'm doing the best I can. You'll have to bear with me. Tosus says that the Easter here is a different Easter entirely, and that is that we're afraid that if he takes this container that has water in it, he might spill some of the water on his body. It'll come out of the receptacle, and then some of it will even spill onto the beged, onto the garment itself, and he might be tempted to rinse out the garment, to squeeze it out and remove its water. That's already an Issur Schita. Tosus offers another pshat that maybe this is also Mishum Refuah B'Shabbos, But if that be the case, then we have to know why is it in the case of the Beged, we said he's allowed to put the Beged. Tosa says that's not Nira Kirafua. That doesn't look like Rafua when you put a warm garment over your belly. But if you're putting warm water in a receptacle over your belly, that doesn't look like you're dressing yourself up. It really looks like Rafua. You're doing it for health reasons, and that's prohibited. So these are a variety of different explanations as to why lo yavi kumkum shel mayim chamim v'yanichenu al b'nei me'ov. And as far as chol is concerned, we said that that's prohibited because of sakana. Now, when we say it's because of sakana, this is already, the Mishnah Brura points out, that's only if the water is hot to the point of yad soledes bo, which we'll discuss in a few minutes. The sugya of yad soledes bo is coming up right here. But if it's just warm water and it's not yad soledes bo, then we don't assume that it'll come to any sort of dangerous situation, and therefore this would be permitted. Then the Gemara,
even on Shabbat or just during?
On Shabbat we have another problem.
So we're still talking about chol.
We're talking about chol.
Okay.
Tana Rabbanan, we have another brisa that says Mevi Adam Kiton Mayim Umeinicho Keneged Hamedura. A person is allowed to take cold water that's in a container, in a jug, a jar, and he's allowed to place that jar next to the fireplace. Not in order to heat up the water until it gets to the point of yad soledes bo, that certainly would be prohibited. Ella bishvil shetofig tzinasa, because it's so cold that he wants to warm it up a bit. And even though if he left it there too long, it would really become boiling hot. We're not afraid of that. We're going to rely, according to the Tanakhama, this price, we're going to rely on his guarantee that he promises us he will not let it stay there until it gets really, really hot. He'll only try to remove the chill. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Rabbi Yehuda says, let's go even further than this. Mevia isha pach shel shemen, a woman's allowed to take a jar of oil, uminichaso, and she could and place it down, keneged hamedora, against the close to the fireplace, v'lo b'shvil shi boshel. He's assuming, Rabbi Yehuda, that in the case of oil there is bishul, which is going to be a big issue here in this sugya. And if oil lends itself to bishul, you and I might say, how are we going to allow her to leave this oil next to the fireplace? Maybe she'll leave it too long, and then it'll reach the level of bishul. But Rabbi Yehuda applies the same logic that we saw in the case of a kiton shalmayim in the reisha of this price, and he says lo b'shvil shei boshel el b'shvil shei posher, in order to warm up the oil a bit, but not to heat it up until it's actually sizzling hot, and we can rely on her guarantee that she will not leave it there too long, and she'll take it away from the fireplace before it reaches the state of bishul. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel Omer, Isha Socha Yada B'Shemen, she could take her hands and anoint them with oil, dip them into oil, and then she could take her hands, U'machamamata Keneged Hamadora, and she could warm them up to the fireplace. And then Socha Libna Katan V'Eina Choshesh. Then she could take this warm oil that's on her hands, and she can smear it on the body of her child, and there's no problem here. Even though the shemen reaches the state of hafshara, it gets warm, and nevertheless, it's mutter. We're going to see in the story of Rebbe that Rebbe holds that hafshero zui bishulo, in a case of oil, we're not going to allow this. And therefore, this statement here of Rabbi Shimon Gamliel is contested by Rebbe, because Rebbe's not going to be so permissive and allow her to warm up the oil to the point in which it's a little bit warm, as he says here, mechamamasa. Now, it's interesting. Let me make the following point here, just in terms of the text itself of this brayso. If you remember Rabbi Yehuda, when he spoke about shemen before Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, he spoke about bishvil shei posher, That was permissible. So underline those words, Bishvil Shei Posher. Now we move on to Rav Shimon Gamliel, and he's going even a step further because he uses the term Mechamamata. Mechamamata or Mechamamta is a verb that indicates something beyond Lahafshir. Mechamamata seems to indicate that it could even become quite hot. Now again, we're going to have to understand exactly what Yatzol lettuce means, because how can you make it so hot that it's that your hands are able to tolerate this heat? But what seems to be the underlying premise here of Rav Shimon Gamliel is that in the case of Shemen, right, there's not an Isur Bishul, because we're not concerned with Bishul. Rabbi Yehuda only said you're allowed to leave it there up to the point of Hafshara. He was very concerned with Bishul, but he said we could rely on her guarantee that she won't let it stay too long. Rav Shimon Gamliel, on the other hand, assumes that there is no Bishul in Shemen, and therefore we don't care about the, you know, about the long length of time that she'll leave her hands next to the fireplace, even though they're full of oil. And this is going to lead us to the next Gemara about Afsharas Shemen. Boilu, the Gemara raises the following doubt, the following suffix: Shemen, Mahu, what's the law of Shemen, of oil? L'tanakama, according to the first Tana. Now, let's go back to the Brisa again. The Brisa started with Kiton Shalmayim and allowed you to put the Kiton Shalmayim next to the fireplace. However, the Tanakhava didn't address the case of Shemen, of oil. Rabbi Yehuda was the one who said that there is Bishul in Shemen, and he's only going to allow you to leave it there for a short period of time so it gets to Pshara. Shei Pasher. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, on the other hand, allows you to leave the oil even a longer period of time, even though it gets to Mechamim. What about the Tanakhama? Tanakhama says nothing about Shemen. He only addresses the case of Mayim. Is Rabbi Rav Yosef, there's going to be a machlokas here between Rabbi and Rav Yosef on the one hand and Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak on the other hand. Rabbi Rav Yosef, they hold that according to Tanakhama, let Tera, the Tanakhama would allow, just like Rabbi Yehuda, would allow you to leave the Shemen near the fireplace in order to get to the level of Hafshara. Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak, Omar, no, according to Tanakhama, Lisura, meaning according to Rav Yitzchak Bar Rav Nachman Yitzchak, the Tanakhama only permitted it in the case of Mayim, but not in the case of Shemen. And this would again be a preview of what's going to come around the bend in the story of Rebbe that we learned, namely that with regard to Shemen, you don't have to wait till the Shemen gets very hot in order to be metake in the Shemen. The tikkun in the Shemen is hefshero, and that's enough. And now Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak is identifying the Tanakhama of our Braisa with the Sheet of Rebbe. So let's now analyze these two opinions in the Tanakhama. Rav Yosef, Diamitra Violet Tera, why do Rav and Rav Yosef insist that according to the Tanakhama it's Muta Shemen? The nature of oil is afal pi shayad sol lettuce bo, even though the oil gets very, very hot, mutar. And why is that so? Because sovra tanakama shemen ein bo mishum bishul. That shemen doesn't lend itself to bishul. So the Tanakama, when he says that a kiton shel mayim, he says you're only allowed to keep it there to the state of Hafshara. In other words, you're not allowed to heat it up. But had it been Shemen, he would allow to be heat it up. Lechamamo. Lechamamo means even to the state of Yad Soledespo. And vi also Rabbi Yehuda Lememar, Rabbi Yehuda went to say and contest the words, the opinion of the Tanakhama, Shemen Yeshbo Mishum Bishu. You're not allowed to heat up Shemen to the point to which it's machamamo. You're only allowed to do hefshero, meaning to heat it up a little bit, because hefshero lo zehu bishulo. So it comes out that Rabbi Yehuda is a middle shita here between two extremes. There's one extreme, which is the sheet of the Tanakhama, according to Rabbi Rav Yosef. They insist that there's no Bishul and Shemen whatsoever. Rabbi Yehuda insists that there is Bishul and Shemen, but there's no Hefsher in Shemen. And then we're going to have the most extreme Shita, which is going to be the Shita of Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, which already we identify with the Shita Rebbe, namely that in the case of Shemen, not only is there Bishul, but even Hefshero Zeu Bishulo. Even Hefsher is considered like Bishul. Okay, so again, we have here a little bit of a table, so to speak. We can write three shitas on this tavla. We have, first of all, the shita of the Tanakhama, which is the most lenient shita. There is no bishul at all in Shemen, so you have no problem leaving the Shemen there as long as you want, not as opposed to Mayim, where there's a problem of bishul. Then we have on the other extreme the shita that not only is there bishul in Shemen, this is Rav Shimon Gamliel and Rebbe, but hefsheru zel bishulo, even to warm it up a little bit, would be a problem of bishul in the case of Shemen. And finally, we have the middle shita, which is the shita of Rabbi Yehuda, and he's the compromise shita. He says, yes, there is bishul in Shemen, but it means to heat it up all the way, so to speak, all the way to Yad Soledis Bo. But Hefshero lo zehu bishulo. Whereas, as we said before, if Shem Gamliel holds Hefshero is considered bishul. Now, if Hefshero is bishul, then certainly we're not allowed to take Shemen, according to Rav Shimon Gamliel, and place it keneged HaMedorah next to the fireplace, even to the state of Hefsher, because that's a violation of the, again, in quotation marks, the bishul of Shemen, which is lechamem es haShemen, meaning, and we discussed at great length, that just like in water, there's a special malacha called lechamem es haMayim. So too, in the case of Shemen, lechamem es haShemen, and if Hefshero itself is enough, that's the tikkun that he needs to achieve in the case of Shemen. But yet, Rav Shimon Gamliel himself says that a woman is allowed to dip her hands into oil and then take her hands and warm them up keneged HaMedorah. And the answer seems to be, and that's this footnote in the name of the Pnei Yoshua number Chaf Aleph, that this is called a shinui. That's not the normal way of doing it. Normally, if you want to warm up oil, you take the jug of oil and you put it next to the fire. Here, what you're doing is you're dipping your hands into the oil and then putting your hands next to the fireplace. That's called a shinui. And therefore, even though Rav Shimon Gamliel holds that there's an Iser Hafshara in Shemen, but nevertheless, if he does it with a shinui, that's okay when she puts her hands into the oil. So the Pnei Yoshua asks the obvious question, and he says, wait a minute. Shinui can remove an Isur D'oraisa of Bishul, but it can't allow you to do something like Hatchila. It's always going to be an Isur D'Rabbanan. And based on this question, the Pnei Yoshua comes up with a very new idea. That even though Rav Shimon Gamliel holds that Shemen is Hefshero Zui Bishulo, those words Hefshero Zui Bishulo mean Mirabbanan Hefshero Zui Bishulo. There's no such thing, even in the case of Shemen, even according to Rav Shimon Gamliel, of warming up Shemen to a point, a degree of temperature that's less than Yad Soledis Bo and violating an Isur D'oraisa of Bishul. That's not the case. You might equate Shemen with Mayim and say that there's a malacha called Mechamem, but in Mayim we say it has to reach Yad Soledis Bo in order to violate an Isur Bishul D'oraisa. The same will apply to Shemen. Therefore, in the worst case scenario, if he took oil, according to Rav Shimon Gamliel, and he placed it near the fireplace to warm it up, and he got to the state of Hefshero, in the worst case scenario, that would be a violation of an Isur D'Rabbanan. Now, D'Rabbanan allowed her to dip her hands into the oil and apply the halacha of Shinui to warm up the oil a little bit. Maybe they did it because, you know, this was common practice in raising a little child that you would want to smear oil. I don't know. But be that as it may, we have here a principle that Shinui, in the case of Hefsher Shemen, is mutter, because the worst case scenario, if you didn't do it with the Shinui, in the case of Hefsher Shemen, would be a violation of an Isur D'Rabbanan. Now Rabbi will say, what does Yad Soledes Bo mean? So for this I need footnote number Yud Zayin. And again, we're going to have to photocopy this footnote, but let me just very quickly run through the main highlights of this footnote. He says that the word soledes, the Hebrew word soledes, means choseres liachar. You know, as you put your hand into the water or whatever it is that's hot, and then you immediately withdraw your hand. Klomar, shahayad choseshes milihichavos, that the hand itself, so to speak, almost like its own personality, feels the heat and is afraid of getting burnt, and therefore immediately pulls back. That instinctual reaction is an indication that the water has reached that level of heat. Now, is there any basis in Tanakh for understanding the word soledes? And he quotes a pasuk in Iyov, and there it says va'asalda. I think also we say it in the piyut, if I'm not mistaken, on Rosh Hashanah. Va'asalda means I will withdraw. Klomar midagati me'ayom miyom adin achzar bi mitlunasai. Iyov was complaining about his lot in life, and he was warned that he better not complain. And therefore he says, I want to withdraw my complaint. That's how Rashi learns the pasuk in Iyov. So to withdraw something is called slida. I think even in modern Hebrew this is used. He gives another example from a Gemara in Nazir. Okay, we don't have to go through that right now. Okay. Now, Rashi here has a whole different take on the word soledes. And he says soledes means chosheshes. So when you say asalda, in the case of Iyov, it means achshosh. I'm going to be very careful. I'm going to be very worried with angst, you know, about the possibility of the repercussions if I don't remove or, shall I say, rescind my complaint. You know, a person registers his complaint against God and now he realizes that's not going to do him well. So again, you have two explanations of the word soledes. One is to withdraw. It's like this natural instinct because you're afraid, the arm itself, the hand itself is afraid of getting burned. And the other is to be afraid of something, to be wary of something. That's called a chashash. And in this case, again, you're wary of getting burned. So both Rashi in Iyov and our interpretation here really come to the same point. It's just different ways of explaining or translating the word soledes. Then he quotes a whole bunch of Rishonim that say that the word asalda is kvias chom, is a burn itself. That the word asalda doesn't mean I will withdraw because I'm afraid of getting burned, but it means to get burned. And he quotes a Radak, and that's what we have here. So again, I promise you, Bli Neder, I didn't yet live up to my pledge that I want to bring in Rav Shimon Ida, because he's going to discuss exactly, after analyzing this together with his Rebbe, Rabbi Moshe Feinstein, exactly what the temperature, the degree of temperature that would qualify as Yad Soledes Bo is. Anybody know it by any chance?
45 degrees Fahrenheit.
Yeah.
Well, that's about 45, right?
Right. Okay, 110 degrees Fahrenheit. Very good. Okay, now the Gemara goes on and says, Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak Omar Lisura. Remember, we had another shita as to how to interpret the Tanakhama, that the Tanakhama holds that it's asur. Why? Shemen afal pisha ein yad soledes bo asur. In the case of Shemen, even if it doesn't get hot enough, okay, we'll call it 110 degrees, 45 degrees centigrade, whatever it is, it's asur. Why? Because sabar Shemen yesh bo mishum bishul vef sheru zeu bishulo. So now the problem is going to be that Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak is identifying the Tanakhama as holding, maintaining the same shita as Rav Shimon Gamliel. So why the repetition? Also, Rav Yehuda lemeimar efsheiro lozel bishul. Also, Rav Shimon Gamliel lemeimar shemen yeshbo mishum bishul vefsheiro zeu bishulo. Very strange. It comes out that according to Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak, Rav Shimon Gamliel is really doing nothing more than reiterating what the Tanakhama holds. But again, it's not a matter of reiterating, because again, the Tanakhama only addressed the case of Kiton Shalmayim. He never spoke about Shemen. So therefore, if Shimon Gamliel is necessary here in this price in order to clarify what's the din of Shemen, and we're holding now that in the case of Shemen, Hef Sheru Zeu Bishula, which again, according to the Pnei Yeshua, is only an Isur Derabbanan, and therefore to take Shemen and place it next to the fireplace on Shabbos would not be mutter unless you do it through a Shinui. We said the Shinui would be Matir, the Isur Derabbanan of Hef Sheru Zeu Bishula, and therefore she can take her hands and submerge them into. Oh, so the Gemara says, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel Hainu Tanakama. Is there any difference now between the Tanakhama and Rav Shimon Gamliel? You know, if the Gemara was bothered by the fact that Rav Shimon Gamliel is clarifying the Tanakhama, then the Gemara wouldn't have asked this question. The Gemara doesn't think that Rav Shimon Gamliel in this price is just coming to spell out and iterate exactly what the Tanakhama had in mind. So the Gemara now thinks that according to Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak, it's clear what the Chachamim say the Tanakhama, and therefore why would Rav Shimon Gamliel just simply repeat what, or why the Braisa quote Rav Shimon Gamliel to just repeat what the Chachamim are saying? Gemara says, Ika Beinayu Kelachar Yad. There is a machlokas here between Rav Shimon Gamliel and the Tanakhama. The Tanakhama went all the way, and he said, we're not going to allow you Hafsharas Shemen, even Bishinu, even if you do it the way where she dips her hands into the oil. That's called kelachar yad, which literally means from the backhand, but it means to do it in a way that's unusual. In the case of Rav Shimon Gamliel, he's lenient, he's matir, this business of sicha, and then litna keneged amdor, because that's called a shinu. Om Rav Yudah Meshmuel, echad shemen v'echad mayim. He wants the paskin halacha that shemen has the same status as mayim, which would put it into the middle category of Rabbi Yehuda. Again, now we're learning no more Rabbi Yehuda, but I mean to say it's identical with the compromise opinion, the middle road, you know, the golden mean opinion of Rabbi Yehuda, the Tana. Yad so let us bow, usur. And yad so let us bow, mutter. He's not going to institute any sort of Isur Derabbanan of Hefsher Shemen, and therefore Hefsher Shemen is mutter, and therefore Shemen has the same status as mayim. Which means that just like in the case of water, we allowed you to put the water next to the fireplace if it's only just to take away the chill, so too in the case of Shemen, if it means just to warm up the Shemen a little bit, that's fine. And that's how we're going to paskin. We're not going to accept the Shita of Rav Shimon Gamliel or the Tanakhama the way Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak understood it. We're not going to accept the Shita of the Tanakhama the way Rav and Rav Yosef understood it, because we're going to assume that Shemen has the identical status as Mayim. Hechi dummy, yad soles bo. So we know that soles means that you would immediately jerk your head back in because you're afraid of getting burnt. Amar Rachva, Rachva says kol shekreso shel tinok nichves, that if the stomach of a child is very sensitive, the skin is sensitive, if you put this water on the stomach of a child, chas v'shalom, then there would be some sort of a blotch or a burn, and that's, you see, I guess what the Gemara wants to establish here is some sort of objective standard for what qualifies, what constitutes Yad Soledes. But if you can just tell me, well, you know, he's afraid of the heat, he might get burned. You know, different people have different fears. You know, some people won't go even near something that may possibly burn them. You know, they just run away from it. Other people are more bold, and they're willing to come close. They, you know, they like to play those dangerous games. What do they call them in sports? You know, they have these extreme sports. You know, so how do you objectify what Yad Soledes bo is? Means that he's afraid of getting burned, and the answer is that it's a heat. We'll call it 110 degrees. We're not going to do an experiment here, but if we would do an experiment, we would see if we drop this water onto the hot water onto the baby's belly, if it gets burnt. And then we have the story, which we'll just read quickly, that we spent a lot of time on. And that Ambati has the status of a Kli Rishon, because again, it's constantly being fed by the Chamei Tveria. Omar Lee said, Tolba Kli Sheni, Shmamina Tlas. We draw three conclusions. Shmamina Shemen Yeshbo Mishum Bishul, Shmamina Kli Sheni Eina Mevashel, Shmamina Efshero Zeu Bishulo. So Rebbe is Machmir. He holds that there is Bishul in Shemen. He holds that the Rabbanon prohibited Hefshero. And he holds that the Rabbanon would only prohibit this in the case of a Kli Rishon, but in the case of a Kli Sheni, they would be lenient. So now, within the context of Hefshero Zeu Bishulo, we have two kulos. That even though Midrabbanan, you're not allowed to be mafshir the Shemen, according to this view, but nevertheless, you're allowing it in the case of a Shinui or in the case of a Kli Sheni. And that leads us back to the page that we started yesterday. And that is page number Lamed Hay, I think, if I remember correctly. And we were up to a paragraph that starts with, on the left column, Vehine, the second paragraph on the left column. And basically, he sets up the following nafkeminas. Let's understand. We established yesterday that there's machlokes, a great fundamental controversy between the Beis Yosef on the one side and the Prima Gadim on the other side regarding Kli Sheni. Whereas the Beis Yosef has an absolute ironclad rule that Kli Sheni ain't a mevashel, there's no bishul in a Kli Sheni, no matter how hot the contents of the Kli Sheni are. Comes along the Prima Gadim, he says no. Kli Sheni, like Kli Rishon, it depends how hot the water in the Kli is. If there's boiling hot water in a Kli Sheni, it'll be Mavasha, even in a Kli Sheni. What do we mean here in the Gemara? When the Gemara says Kli Sheni and a Mavasha, it means, generally speaking, a Kli Sheni and a Mavasha, because very quickly it starts cooling off. But if you manage to put food in immediately after you pour it from the Kli Rishon into this Kli Sheni, and the water in the Kli Sheni is boiling hot, says the Prima Gadim, then Kli Sheni would be Mavasha. So this is going to be the first Nafkamina, which he codifies here in the paragraph of Hine, that the Nafkamina between the Beis Yosef and the Prima Gadim is going to be a case where there's very hot water in a Kli Sheni. The Beis Yosef would say, Ain Kli Sheni Mavashel, period. There's no Bishul in Kli Sheni. Whereas the Rosh Yosef, which is the Prima Gadim, he holds, no, since the water is very hot, it hasn't yet cooled off, you could be Mavashel in the Kli Sheni. And he writes here that the Chayonim seems to accept that opinion, that view of the Prima Gadim. Which, as I said already yesterday, that doesn't make me feel very happy, because we are very much on the side here of the Beis Yosef, that there's no such thing as Bishul in a Kli Sheni. Now, in the case of Ambati Shel Merchatz, which was the story of Rebbe, remember we said that Ambati has the status of a Kli Rishon. Why? After all, there's no fire that's underneath this Ambati, it's just the water that's coming from the Chamei Tveria. So we said that the water in this Ambati is boiling hot because it's constantly being fed with a non-stop flow from Chamei Tveria. But we see clearly then that even a Kli Sheni could be considered a Kli Rishon. Why? Because of the heat of the water. This would seem to be a clear-cut support for the Shita of the Prima Gadim, that if you have very hot water in a Kli Sheni, then it's Mavasha like in a Kli Rishon. But the answer is that the Beis Yosef would maintain that when you have water that's constantly feeding into this ambati, into this vessel, then that's called a Kli Rishon. Kli Rishon itself means that it's near the fire, and it's getting the heat from the fire. In this case, the fire is Chamei Tveria, and the Chamei Tveria constantly feeding, pouring into this Merchatz, and therefore it has the status of a Kli Rishon. Alternatively, you know, whenever we have a problem like this, we could always introduce an Isur de Rabbanon. And that's what he quotes here in the name of Tosfos, which we haven't gotten to, that in the case where you have a klisheni that's absolutely boiling hot, although that's not bishul d'oraisa, it does qualify as bishul d'rabbana. And now he quotes the Tosfos of Rosh on Membeis, who seems to indicate that kli rishon, I'm sorry, that a klisheni that's boiling hot has the din of a kli rishon d'oraisa, and he violates bishul mamish. That Tosfos of Rosh would seem to support the prima godim that you could have bishul d'oraisa in a klisheni if the water is hot enough, and you violate the melechas bishul, and that's an isur Torah. Now again, it could very well be that the case of the Tosa Rush is a case where that klisheni is constantly being fed with hot water, the new hot water that comes in, like the case of Abati Shel Merchatz, and therefore it has the status of a kli rishon. It's very possible. In the next paragraph he says that according to the Beis Yosef, li olam ein mevashel, that means klisheni is never mevashel. And the reason for that is, according to Beis Yosef, you remember that you need the koach hakli, and here there's no koach hakli in the case of a klisheni. So that's nafkamina number one. Again, just to summarize, what if the water in the klisheni is absolutely boiling hot? Now, the paragraph that starts nafkamina no sefes, we have a second nafkamina. And again, I would, you know, I wish I could write a letter to the editor over here. You know, on that first line, do you see the last word in the line? What's the last word in that line, nafkamina, that first line?
Sheva
mitzius. I wish I could cross that out. Instead of b'mitzius, it would make a lot more sense, in my humble opinion, to write she'al pi din. We're not talking about mitzius. Mitzius means the biological reality. We're not talking about that. The Beis Yosef is saying, forget about the biology. Forget about, taking a thermometer and putting it into this cliche and finding out how hot it is. And if it's not hot enough, therefore it's not mavash. That's not what he's talking about. The Beis Yosef couldn't care less how hot the water is inside this cliche. Why is it not mavashal? Because that's the law of a cliche. Because since the process of cooling off has begun in a cliche, as soon as you pour it into a cliche, that itself makes the klisheni mufka, excluded from bishul. I'll be din. Again, if you ask, can I fool you, and I put two foods down in front of you, two cooked foods. One was cooked in a kli rishon, the other was cooked in a klisheni. Can I fool you? I can fool you. You're the best chef in the world, but you won't be able to tell the difference. But yet, the second one, namely the klisheni, is eino mevash. Yeah.
If anyone would pin down the Beit Yosef, wouldn't he say, kind of like the Tosfos, if it was Yad Soledetbo, it was only for the first minute when it was closest still to the fire. That's Iri Mikli Rishon. That's a different Chomra Limi alone.
So wait a second. So I'm holding off on Iri Kli Rishon because that's going to be page Lamed Vav. That we have now. Right?
Okay. So coming complications.
So wait a minute. So let's leave out Kli Rishon just for a minute. I mean Iri Kli Rishon. But keep in mind, Shmuel, whatever you have to say conceptually, because it'll come in handy. But I'm not yet mentally prepared to deal with Iri Kli Rishon. So again, right now we're talking about a case of Kli Sheni. And we have the following case. He says the following. Oh, I'm sorry. This paragraph is your case of Iri Kli Rishon.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah, I forgot. I thought it was on the second side. On the second side, he's going to have another case. Do you know when the issue of putting a left? What's a lefel called in English? You know those when you take out soup from a
ladle.
A ladle, yeah. Ladle is an English word.
Okay,
sounds like a Jewish word. Okay, anyway. So yeah, what's the deal with a ladle that you dig into the pot itself? So the pot itself is the kli rishon. Mm-hmm. The ladle technically is a cliche, but you put it inside the kli rishon. And even though it never touches the fire directly, but it's very close. So that's going to be our discussion on Lamed Vav. But your discussion, Shmuel, is right here in this paragraph, Nafka Mina. And he says the following. At what point does the klisheni become a klisheni? Does when does it gain the status of the klisheni? Is it from the moment that it leaves the kli rishon, or is it from the moment that it comes into the klisheni? Because again, Tosfos is operating, as we'll soon see, with two variables. Number one, he needs the heat of the walls of the pot to continue the cooking process. That's a kli rishon, meaning the kli rishon, since it was on the fire, the metal of the walls of the utensil of the pot have absorbed such a great degree of heat that's going to help the kli rishon to create a bishul of whatever you put inside of it. That's what he calls, the Beis Yosef calls the koach hakli. In that case, it means the very moment that the contents of the kli leave the kli, it's no longer a kli rishon. Or no, Tosfos also gives another svar that in a kli sheni, the walls of the kli, since they were not on the fire, cool off the contents of the kli. And the difference between the first one and the second one, the first definition means that you need the help of the walls of the kli rishon in order to be mevashel. And the second definition, no, that it's the walls of the second kli that cool it off. In the middle is irui kli rishon. What happens in irui kli rishon? He pours it from a kli rishon, but it hasn't yet entered into a kli sheni, and now it falls onto the food or whatever it has to cook. Shall we say that in that case it has the status of a kli rishon because it never came into the second utensil, and therefore there would be bishul? That's going to be one opinion in terms of iru kli rishon. The other opinion is going to say, well, you know what? It's already kli sheni. Why? Because even though it didn't come into a new kli that's going to cool it off, it already left the walls of the first kli that are meant to heat it up. And he says that this could be very relevant, for example, in a case where he pours from a kli rishon hot water onto a dover gush. Okay, so let me write that down, a dover gush. What is a dover gush?
Potato.
A potato, any solid substance or solid food. So again, so what you have, here's your kli rishon, right? This is your kli rishon, it's on the fire. And now you pour onto a dover gush. I don't know how you would illustrate the pouring. So this is your piece of meat, and you're pouring from a kli rishon onto a dover gush. So he says, this water that, or whatever is hot soup, whatever coming out of the kli rishon, has not yet entered into a kli sheni. But on the other hand, it no longer has that extra oomph, that extra power of heat coming from the kli rishon, because it's already, you know, suspended in midair. Yotzal avir olam mitfanos achamu shal kli rishon, and therefore it already has the status of a kli sheni. Oshem, what should we say? When does it become kli sheni? Rak mishoshen nichnas letoch atfanos atzonen oshal kli sheni, and afkemidu leiri kli rishon. Because in the case of iri kli rishon, adayin lo nichnas letefanos tzonenos, it hasn't yet entered into the walls of the second kli that would cool it off. Ki adayin odo ba'avir, it's still suspended in air. But on the other hand, it's no longer being heated up by the original kli rishon because it's out of the bounds of the kli rishon. And now he says nifsak hakiluach. That's where he has footnote number nun gimel. So that already is something that we didn't touch. Nifsak kiluach. Yeah.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah, please.
That when he's pouring from the kli rishon onto the dove gush, is it not in another kli? It's just by itself. Otherwise, I don't understand.
Yeah, it can't be in the middle of the air. Right. So it's got to be in a kli. But let's say it's in an open, you know, it's a flat
surface.
So
it's not a kli.
Well, I don't know what you mean when you say it's not a kli. Uh-huh. You know, Don, to say it's not a kli, you are touching on one.
I'm assuming
you know, like half a shas.
I'm assuming
when you say something's not a kli, you'd have to be the greatest scholar in the world to know the answer to that question. What is a kli? There's a mesecta. I think it's the largest mesecta in shas called Kalim, and then that mesecta is dedicated to what is a kli. You know, in secular law, for example, lahavdil el famdolos, nobody would ever ask the question, "What's a kli?" In halacha, one of the most complicated questions you can ever ask anybody is, what's a kli? If it's broken, if it's not broken, if it's made of this substance, that substance, it's temporary, it's disposable. I mean, there's so many issues about how to define a kli. So wait a second. So far we discussed the following: where you're pouring hot liquids onto a solid substance, and the hot liquids are coming out of a kli rishon. Now he switches it around, and he wants to know the following: what happens if you heat up meat in a kli rishon? Okay, imagine you have a frying pan, and you heat up a hamburger. You know, it's sizzling hot in a kli rishon. Now you take that hamburger and you take it out of the kli rishon. Okay. Now, when you take it out of the kli rishon, if you put it down on a flat surface, which he calls a kara, okay, that reminds us of the night of Pesach. He says, "Ein adfados makaros oso." The piece of meat is not surrounded on all sides. It doesn't have maximum contact with the fanos hamakaros, with the walls of a kli, because it's, you know, it's a thick piece of meat that's sitting on a flat surface. He says, but on the other hand, it's no longer frying in the original pan, because he took it out of the original frying pan and he put it into the second flat plant pan. And it could be that the very moment he took it out and it hits the air, you know, the aver olam, you know, it no longer has the status of a kli rishon. So therefore, if let's say he pours something cold, let's say cold milk, this would be a shayla in Bosa v'cholav, and certainly on Shabbos it would be an issue of bishul. If he pours it onto this hot piece of meat that's no longer in the kli rishon, but yet it hasn't been cooled off by the defanos of a kli shein. So that's all this paragraph nafka mina. You know, I'm in the mood for a story. You know, what happens when a person gets on an LL plane, let's say from Melbourne, Australia, or from New York, USA, on his way to Israel? Where is he? Is he in Melbourne? Is he in New York? Or is he in Ben Gurion Airport? So sometime, and at the very moment the plane takes off, he's already in Eretz Yisrael. So that's the thing here. You know, the very moment that you take something out of a kli rishon, it's already in a kli sheni. Anyway, in the next paragraph, Achavas Das, that's the same as the same author of the Nesivus, as he's most famously known, Rav Yaakov Milisa, who lived, it's coming close to 2 centuries ago. He says the following. If you read the language of Tosis carefully, there seems to be a contradiction on this very point of Iri Kli Rishon in the language of Tosis. Because at the very beginning, Tosis says, quote, Kli Rishon mitoch sha'omed ala or dafnosov mechamimin umachzik chomos man meruba, that because this Kli Rishon was on the fire, even though now the fire is off, but it still has a heat in the walls of the kli that continues to be hot for a long period of time. So you see that in order to make you into a kli rishon, you got to become a kli rishon. You need a positive factor to make you into a kli rishon, which means that you need the dofnei kli machzikos hachom. But then at the end of Tosus, he says umitoch. Now he talks about a kli sheni. Umitoch she'ein dafnosav chamin, when he puts in a kli sheni, and the walls of the kli are not hot, holeichu miskarer, it starts a process of cooling it off. So the Nesivus points out that there's a middle ground here between the two extreme positions of Tosus, and that's the case of Iri Kli Rishon. In the formulation of Tosus in the Reisha, Tosus seems to indicate that unless it's being heated up by the walls of the kli, it's not in the power of Bishul of Kli Rishon. From the Sefer, Tosus assumes no, that in order to make it into a kli sheni and remove the power of Bishul, you have to put it into a kli sheni. So Iri Kli Rishon really depends upon where you put the emphasis here, on the Reisha of Tosus or on the Sefer. And then the Sima says that the nafka mina is this case that I mentioned before. If you take a dover gush, a solid substance, and you remove it from a kli rishon, you put it on a kara, and technically it's in a kli sheni, but nevertheless the heat the heat in the sizzling piece of meat, if it was meat is of the Dover Gush, is going to retain itself for a while. It's not going to be cooled off. And that's the question here. Then we turn to Lamed Vav of an Aleph. And the Chazon Ish says that Iri Kli Rishon is the same as Kli Sheni. You remember, perhaps, that the Chazon Ish coined the phrase Ponim Chadoshos Bo Lekan, meaning the Chazon Ish's approach was that a Kli Sheni is too far removed from the original fire. If you have a Kli Rishon that was once on the fire, that's connected to the fire. It's like Toldos Ha'esh. But once you take it from the Kli Rishon, you pour it into a Kli Sheni, it already is one step removed from the connection to the Esh. And therefore it's not Mevashel. Says the Chazon Ish, in the case where he does Iri Kli Rishon, it's already left the walls of the first Kli, it's already one step removed from the Esh. And therefore it is not Bishul. That's pretty fascinating. Now, in the paragraph of Hine, he says that the issue of a Dover Gush, how to define it, is actually a machlokas between the Ramah and the Marshal. The Ramah in Shulchan Aruch assumes that a Dover Gush, once it's removed from a Kli Rishon, has the status of a Kli Sheni, and that's a tremendous kula, a leniency that applies first and foremost in Basa V'Cholah. And the Marshal, on the other hand, who was more or less a contemporary of the Ramah, he's of the opinion that as long as it hasn't been put into another Kli, it's still considered Kli Rishon. And unfortunately, the Mishnah Berurah says we have to be Machmir for the Marshal, which is a tremendous Chumrah. And he writes, this is Mishnah Berurah, Siman Shin Yud Ches, which as I said many times, is the Siman of Bishul, Sivkot and Samachay, and he writes, Yesh la hachmir min ha-safek. If we're in doubt, we should be machmir. Ach b'di'eved, im hiniach dover gush, al dover she'eno mevushal, lo nesar ha-machal, to b'di'eved yesh lismoch al shitas ha-matirim. So he says, l'chatchila, we have to avoid it at all costs. But if something happened, and he puts down a hot piece of meat over some sort of foodstuff, he says, that we could be the evidence in that situation post facto, we can rely on the shita of the Ramah Lakula. Okay. Now we get to another nafkamina. This is a Taz that starts in the paragraph Umatsinu. He says, the ladle. The ladle is called in Hebrew a Kli Sheshavim Bo. Shavim Bo means we draw from a Kli Rishon, V'yotzkim, and we pour from there into a kara, into a bowl, or a plate. So we call the ladle. Now, what does he do? He digs the ladle into the Kli Rishon. And the Taz wants to claim that at the very moment that he digs the ladle into the Kli Rishon, the ladle itself, even though it was never on the fire, has the properties of a Kli Rishon because it's heated up by the contents of the Kli Rishon. And the Taz is so convinced of this that he says that not only does the ladle retain or assume the identity of a Kli Rishon while it's inside the pot, but he says, Af Kishas Hotziua, this on line 4, when he takes it out of the pot and he pours it into a bowl, it has the halacha of Kli Rishon. Now again, what does that mean it has the halacha of Kli Rishon? Let's say I would put food into the ladle that's full of this hot soup. Okay, that could be a problem of Bishul. And even if I want to put croutons, which were baked, and I want to put baked challah into my ladle, that's going to be a problem because, again, I don't want to get into now, but there's one opinion that says Yesh Bishul Acharfia. Now, what happens when he takes the ladle and he pours it into the Kli? That for sure becomes a Kli Sheni. So what does he mean when he says Lekach Afkshotziu Me'akdera V'yotzku Mimenu Lekara Dino Tekli Rishon? I think what he means is if he pours it directly from the ladle onto something, this is not totally clear. The Truma Sadeshin, he quotes in a footnote that once he takes the ladle out of the pot, it's already considered a klisheni, which would mean that the bowl becomes a klishlishi. The Taz is assuming, no, that the ladle still has the status of a kli rishon. But again, when you pour it into a kli sheni, that's for sure a kli sheni. And if it's a kli sheni, now you'd have to only worry about kali abishul. Now, I'm not sure what exactly kali abishul would be in this case, but let's say salt. I don't know. Are you allowed to pour salt into your kli? Or any other spices? Now, assuming those spices were never cooked, they might have the halacha of kali abishal. Again, Reb Chaim held that salt could never be kali abishal because you never eat salt on its own. You only eat salt within the context of a foodstuff. And then tavlin is not. Again, if let's say you took spices, you know, let's say you had raw, I don't know, tea leaves or so. What are they called? Peppermint, spearmint, whatever they're called. Nana. And you, what do you saw?
Nana.
Nana, yeah, nana is Hebrew, I think. Yeah, or maybe it's Arabic. I don't know what language is. What is it called in English?
Mint leaves.
Mint leaves. So let's say you took raw mint leaves. You know, it could very well be that if you poured hot, boiling hot water on the mint leaves, you are cooking the leaves. I don't know. He says, but did they... Go ahead, Ben. What did you want to say after this
scenario? Yeah. My understanding is on Shabbos, you remove the kli rishon ala ish somewhere else, keep your hand on it, and then use the ladle. I'm just wondering if that's the scenario we're dealing with here. Because if you're using the ladle, it's almost like bishul itself, if it's still on the source of heat.
Again, what I understand from the Taz, and we have to really check this out, but the impression I get is that whatever the status of the soup... bowl, or the soup pot, right? The soup pot that was heated on the fire. Whatever the status of that pot is, the ladle picks up the same status. Now, according to the Truma Sadeshin, okay, the ladle picks up that same status as long as it's submerged inside the pot. Once you take it out of the pot, it loses its status. The Taz is of the opinion that once the ladle enters into the Kli Rishon, it gets heated up at that very second, and it could very well be that even, that's what he says on the fourth line, af kishatzi umek, even when he takes the ladle out of the pot, it doesn't lose its status of a kli rishon until you pour it into the thing. Now, you're asking, well, what happens if I took the pot off the fire? It still has the status of a kli rishon. So whatever status you give to the pot, then the ladle picks up that same status, and the chiddush of the Taz is that not only does the ladle pick up that status of the kli rishon, but it retains that status even after it's removed from the kli rishon. Why? Because now it becomes a first degree kli rishon. It's no longer a second degree kli rishon. It's a first degree kli rishon. You see, according to the Truma Sadeshin, you can say that the ladle is a kli rishon, but as long as it's somehow connected to a kli rishon, once you take it out of the kli rishon, but it, you understand what I mean? It's not the original. Whereas the Taz seems to assume that it becomes the original. And that's going to lead us to various problems. And we're going to have to check this out in the Shulchan Aruch, because if you accept that principle, then certain things that perhaps could be cooked in a kli sheni, whatever that means, would be problematic in your soup, because you took the ladle and you put it in. Again, how would you set up the kara as a kli shlishi? You see, that's going to be a problem. According to the Taz, it's a real mess. How are you going to get a kli shlishi over here? Because the ladle is always a kli rishon, therefore the soup bowl is a kli. I don't know. What you'd have to do is, I don't know if there is such a possibility, you'd have to put everything into another kli, some sort of large, and then spoon it out from the large.
It's like a buffet. You take from the out of the fire.
And yeah, you wouldn't put the pot on the table.
From pot one to pot two, and that pot two is like
buffet. Yeah,
buffet.
Nice. But I mean, have you ever seen such a thing?
Yes.
Yeah?
Turin. My wife calls it a Turin.
Turin. T-U-R-E-N? T-U-R-I-N.
She doesn't spell
it. Okay. And then what does she do with the Torah? Does she put it actually on the table?
Yeah.
Mavish on the table.
Yes.
And then she starts serving it.
Right. Yeah, if you have company, that's what you do. You don't put the pot on the table.
You put it on a tripod or something?
No, you put it into a serving dish. The Torah.
No, I'm saying the Torah sits on the table itself because it's boiling hot.
Well, I know. You put everything underneath.
Well, it's a cliche.
Serving dish.
And then you put it onto your plate or whatever.
Yeah, I would. Yeah, I would imagine you put it onto a tripod. But
can I ask a question?
Yeah,
and was showing.
You know how the post game called a tripod? By the way, it's very cute. A dreifus. No jokes.
What?
Well, dry means three, and fuss means feet. That's the exact translation. In fact, tripod is really a translation of dreifus.
Could be. Why isn't the ladle considered a iri kli rishon? Maybe I'm showing my...
Wait, so again, what we're assuming now is the following. That if let's say you dig the ladle in or whatever it is, and according to the Taz, even when you take it out, it has a bit of a kli rishon, if you would put something in that ladle, let's say you know she wanted to add spices into the ladle itself, or let's say croutons or something of that, you might have a problem of bishul and a kli rishon, according to the Taz. Now, as soon as you pour it, that becomes iri kli rishon, and we don't know what the status of iri kli rishon is.
Right.
We vacillated back and forth on that.
No, so if you put the ladle into the pot and take out the soup or whatever and put it into another kli, so why isn't the ladle itself at that, when you put it in and take it out, considered? Because you're saying it's a kli rishon,
right?
Or is it a kli shini? That's the dispute. Why isn't it an iri kli rishon? That's what I'm trying to figure out. Maybe I'm not understanding.
Again, if you assume that the ladle is the kli rishon, then as soon as you pour from the ladle onto your pot, that pouring itself, you know, in midair, is iri kli rishon, which is contestable. You know, that's debatable. Once it hits the bowl, it's a cliche, but cliche is a problem sometimes, right? That's what we're beginning to see. The Prima Gadim sees it a pretty serious issue. In the Turin case, you have then by the time it gets into your pot, it's a cliche, throw in all the croutons you want. But if you're not using a Turin, so then you're literally, you know, she's standing there by the fire, we'll call it the blech, and she's pouring one portion at a time from the ladle into your personal service bowl. You're getting something going through the Taz that's in a klisheni, which again gets me a little nervous, klisheni, because if it's hot in the klisheni, we may have some problems about what we can put into that klisheni. So the Turin issue is that that's a wonderful way of solving the... Again, according to the Truma Sadeshin, I have no problem. Because the Truma Sadeshin says that the identity, the status of that ladle changes the very second that you take it out of the... Because it's not an original kli rishon. So therefore, it only gets the status of a kli rishon as long as it's in the pot. Because now it's connected to the fire, or what once was the fire, in the kli rishon. But now, the moment you take it off and you lift it up in the air, it already becomes cliche. You know, this is an interesting quiz question. If you were going for smicha, give me a scenario in which a kli rishon becomes a cliche. Clark Kent becomes Superman, right? Or the other way around, whichever way. You know, it's how do you change the identity of a kli from a kli rishon to cliche? There's no such thing. Rabbi Berzheim, if you ask me such a question, you must be an idiot for asking me that question, right?
You need a phone booth. Go into the phone booth, change your clothing.
Right. But now what we're saying is that according to the Truma Sadeshen, you know, once you remove the kli rishon, which in this case is the ladle, it becomes a cliche. So he says, "V'digdei tzofim v'dibrei atos shenotus atav shekliyshen mevashel mishum shetfanosav tzonos v'karas atav shil v'medugdak mikach sheim nischamu dafros v'mersichas kli rishon ein lo zed din shel kliyshenim." You know, it's why is the Taz compelled to this position that the ladle, even after it's removed, it remains a kli rishon? He says, because Tosus puts all the emphasis on the fact that there's something called Daphnos Makaros, meaning that the klisheni is got the walls of the klisheni are cooling it off. That's not true, because here the ladle had a status of a Kli Rishon, so it has all the resichus of a Kli Rishon, and therefore it cannot be considered as a Kli Sheni. There's no Daphne Akli Makaros. Now I'm going to fast forward to a Mishnah Brura. He says the Mishnah Brura Kriya Shedino Kikli Rishon. In other words, the Mishnah Brura wants to know how long did he leave the ladle inside the, that's probably Rabbi Myers' phone. No kidding.
That means about
a tape.
Kufka. It says Kufka.
Yeah.
Mibishol Klisheni. Kufka. Bishol Doraita, Bishol Derabanan. Seems like we need that qualification.
So that's interesting, because that's before we came into class today. We would have said Hufka Mibishol, period. But now, in the paragraph here on Daf Lamed He, I'm trying to find the paragraph that we learned a little bit earlier. Here, Ukmo, on Lamed He. That's the paragraph you want to check off.
Okay.
Do you see the paragraph Ukmo on the left side?
Yes, I do.
Oh, he wants to say that when we, let's say, Rebbe, for example, told Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchok to Bar Avdimi to avoid putting the shemen into the ambati shel merchatz, right? So the question is, wait a minute, the ambati shel merchatz has no connection to the ar, to the fire itself, right? Because the waters were drawn from, let's say, the Chavei Tveria, they went into the ambati shel merchatz. So why did Rebbe tell him, don't you dare put the shemen into the ambati, but rather take the water from the ambati and put it into a kli sheni? L'chora, it makes no sense. The ambati itself is a kli sheni. So Tosus says that yesh isur b'kli sheni mi divrehem. This is two lines before the end of that paragraph. You want to underline the word mi divrehem. Do you see that word?
Not yet.
Midivrayim. Midivrayim is the beginning of a sentence that ends with the word midirabonon.
Oh, okay.
Do you have that?
Yes.
So if you underline that line, it comes out that there's something wild over here, that there's no klisheni. There's no bishul in a klisheni. Period. We're holding like the Beis Yosef, it's an absolute rule. Rav Soloveitchik would certainly be on board. But now, Tosis is machadish. Have a great Hanukkah, Don.
Take care, Don.
We'll see you tomorrow.
Yeah.
Good.
Tomorrow.
So have a great first day of Hanukkah. Okay, and hopefully second day of Hanukkah too, because the miracle has to continue for 8 days. You know. And what we're saying is that according to Tosfos on Daf Mem Beis, which we didn't even see yet, that's why this is such a new idea, that Kli Sheni might be Mavashal Midrabon. And we're going to have to rack our brains to figure that out, because generally speaking, when you have a case which is completely mufka, then the Rabbanan don't prohibit it. When you have a case that's really a malacha, just it's missing a condition, like, I'll give you an example. Would anyone say that Midrabbanan, I'm not allowed to cook my egg in the sun? Nobody says, I can put my egg in the sun and cook it. Why? Because Chama is not Bishul. And if it's not Bishul, then even Rabbanan it's not Bishul. So I would say Kli Sheni is not Bishul. Comes on toast, he says, no, but it looks like Bishul. Especially when it's in a merchatz that's being fed by the waters of the Chavetz.
But I thought that's my mechubarim, so it's actually Kli Rishon.
Correct. You and I would have said, and the many Rishonim would insist that Rebbe was nervous because he defined the merchatz as a Kli Rishon. Others will say, like the Prima Gadol, that it's really a Kli Sheni, but since the waters are constantly flowing in, it's boiling hot. And if it's boiling hot water in a Kli Sheni, it has a din of a Kli Rishon. But it's a Kli Sheni. And Kli Sheni could be Mavashal. That's the Prima Gadol. What we're saying now is that according to Tosfos, it's a Kli Sheni. It's not Mavashal, but the Rabbanan asked. That's a whole new, which we only know from today. Okay then? So we'll stop here.